Good evening and welcome. I see a few faces that are here for the first time tonight. And so to you who have come to this place for the first time, I want to say welcome. And I'm so glad that you're with us. This is our worship service at Outreach Red Bank. We don't ordinarily meet in this room. So if you come back next week and you come here, it'll be empty. But I want to just say thank you for choosing to be here tonight. And I also want to introduce myself. My name is Christian. And I am one of the people who is a part of this community, Outreach Red Bank, that gathers together each Sunday for worship, but then also throughout the week with the same goal. And that is to hear as clearly as we can what God means to say to us, and then to respond as faithfully as we can. Now, if you were here last week, you know that we started a new series of sermons last week, and we're going to have the second in that series tonight. And so, if you were here last week, this will be a refresher, but if you were not, this is going to be new. What we're planning is pretty simple. It will be that from now until Christmas, we're going to dwell on the Christmas story. And the reason we're going to do that is, and I made this clear last week, is the conviction that that story, the story of the birth of Christ, it tells what, if it's true, is the most important story ever told, and that is that God came to dwell among his people. And not only among his people then, but among us now. Now, if that's true, it means that that story has something amazing to say to all of us, as it did to the people who first heard it. And believing that, I decided, and I did this with some others who will also help as we go through this series, that if we were to spend more than just 1 week on the Christmas story, it would be good. And the way we would do that is simple. There are a lot of characters that appear in the story of Christmas. Some of them are very well known to us. Mary and Joseph, for example, the wise men or the magi. But there are others who are not so well known. And our approach will be this. It's very simple. If we would take time to see the story from the perspective of each one of the characters who plays a significant part in it, then we would stand the possibility of learning something that we might not otherwise see. And if this story is such good news, then we would learn something that we need to hear as people today. Not just about a story that happened a long time ago, but about a story that concerns us today. Now, last week we talked about Joseph, and everybody knows about Joseph, because he's on all the Christmas cards and in the crèche sets. Tonight, the character will be one who I don't think has ever appeared on a Christmas greeting card. And it is the character of Herod. If you know the details of his story, it would not make for a pleasant greeting card. We're going to look at it tonight because there is something in it, I'm convinced of this, there is something in it that speaks to each one of us where we are. And it shows us something about ourselves that we might not want to see, but we need to see. That's one thing. The other thing is this. When we look at the story through the perspective of this particular man, Herod, we see something that the author, the man who wrote this book, Matthew, wanted to tell us as readers that we will miss because we're 2,000 years separated from the story that everyone who heard it in the first place would have heard. And so we're going to try to hear those two things together tonight. Now, in order to do that, what you need to do is grab a Bible. And there should be Bibles that were put out, and you might need to share, because there might be more people with Bibles. But the ones that we put out look like this. And if each of you could grab one and open up to the first chapter of the book of Matthew. And if you need to share with someone, please feel free to do that. We're actually going to look at the second chapter tonight. And let me give you this refresher of what happened in the first chapter, and I'm going to put it like this, it's pretty simple. In that chapter, we read that Mary was pregnant, that it wasn't her husband who did this, that God came to Joseph and said, I'm the one who's been involved in what's going on here. This is of the Holy Spirit, what's happening in her. And then he tells Joseph to name this child Jesus, because he will save people from their sins, and Emmanuel, because this is God with us. So the first chapter tells us this news, that in this little baby, God has come into the world to save people. This is very important news. Now, some of you here tonight might think, well, I'm not sure I accept the worldview presented in the scriptures. So, or others of you might think, yes, I'm totally on board with this stuff. I'm a Christian and I believe this. Either way, you must hear this. The first chapter makes a clear announcement about something that has happened. The second chapter, which is what we're going to look at tonight, it shows two very different responses to this news. And it shows these different responses in two different character groups. On the one hand, in the second chapter, we'll meet the Magi. Do you know who these people are? What's the song that you sing about them? Someone say it.
We three kings.
Now, I have to say this. In Matthew, they're neither said to be kings, nor are there three of them. Interesting. We're going to talk about them next week. These three, or four, or two, we don't know. They show us one response to this news. There's another character we're going to look at tonight named Herod, and he shows us the other response, which is the exact opposite of the Magi's response. Let's look at the beginning of chapter 2 together, and we're going to read a little bit, and here's what I want you to try to do as a reader, or as a hearer if you just want to listen. Do the best you can to try to listen to this story from his perspective, Herod. Not from your perspective of what you know about the Christmas story, but from the perspective of this man, Herod. All right? Matthew chapter 2, verse 1 begins like this. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we have observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. I'm going to stop there because we've already got a picture of how he is responding. He is frightened. Now, who is this Herod? Well, you see there in the first verse that he is a king. Maybe you know some history of this time period in that area of the world. But at the time of this story's being written, Rome was in control of the land that was called Judea. Years before, it had belonged to the Syrian Empire, but about 200 years B.C., from 200 years B.C. to 67, Syria occupied this region, and then in 67, Rome took over. And at that time, they realized they could control the people of this area better if they installed a king who came from that geographical region. So rather than having a Roman king from far away come into this foreign land to try to lure, to lead, what they did is they found someone inside the land and made him into king. They did this in 67, they did it again a few generations later, and then once again, third time, in the year 37, which is when King Herod became king of that region because of his collusion with Rome. Now, Herod was called Herod the Great. Herod was really not so great. He was terrible, in fact. And we read of Herod in the history that was being written outside of the scriptures at the time by a man named Josephus. And there are other histories that tell of what his leadership was like during that time. He was a king who was in charge, and he maintained his power by the exercise of might and violence. He, in fact, killed his own family members to prevent a threat to his leadership. It was also told that shortly before he rose to power, there were others who were vying for this position, and he had thousands, in fact, killed who would be potential threats to his being king. And so at the time of this story, when this is being written, we have a man named Herod who is the king of this region. Now, the capital city of Judea is Jerusalem. And that's where he lives. And he lives in a palace. It's nice where he lives. It's really, he's got his own personal hot tub. Just making sure you're there. Okay. Now I want you to picture this, because we just read these words, they go by quickly. There he is, Herod, in his palace. And then some guys from the east called Magi come and they show up. And they ask him a question. Now, can you picture this with me? He's sitting there on his throne in the palace in the capital city. He's in charge of everything. Anyone who resists him, he kills him. It's easy. In come these three or four, or however many foreigners, and they say to him, they ask the question, "Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews?" Now, do you know how it works to be a king? There's only one king at a time, right? There's not two kings, there's one king. So these fellows come in and ask him, where's the one who was born the king of the Jews? What does that sound like to you if you're King Herod? Listen. Wouldn't you laugh? Now, he doesn't laugh. When this question is put to him, where's the king who was born? This means, if it's true that there was a baby that was born the new king, it means that Herod's not the king. Now, if you think about it, why would he even care? He's the king. He could have just whacked these guys. Put them out. He didn't. He is frightened. Now, this tells us something about him. And I want you to imagine what would have to be true about you if you were the king and someone asked you this question and your response was to become afraid. You know what would have to be true about you? You would have to know somewhere deep inside that you weren't really the true king. And that someone else was actually the one who had authority over you and all the people who you were pretending to be in charge of. And when he responds with fear, he's showing us already that he knows, all along he's known, that he's not the true king, but that someone else is. And when this question is asked, it uncovers that reality for him. And what it does is it puts him in a position where he has to make a choice. It puts him in a place where he needs to respond. And this is, you must see this, what he must choose at this moment is this. Will he acknowledge that there is another who is the true king, or will he attempt to resist the true authority of the real king that has been born? Do you see that? Let me ask you this. Do you see yourself in this story? Do you see where you are yet? Every one of us wants to be in charge of ourselves as if we were the king or the queen of our lives. And this story, this Christmas story, it puts a claim out that demands a decision from each one of us, and it's this. Will we acknowledge that we're actually not the king or the queen? And will we accept that there is another who is truly the king, or will we seek to resist him? We want to be, every one of us, we want to be in charge of ourselves. We want to be the ones who decide what's right or wrong for us. But we're in a bind because just like Herod, we also know deep down inside that we're not actually up to the task of ruling over ourselves. We know that we're not very good when it comes to deciding what's truly best for us, don't we? Every single one of us wants to act as if we had control over the future. Everyone does. But do you know what? We know that we have no idea what tomorrow brings. And that scares us. We're frightened. Every one of us wants to grab a hold of every choice that comes next and act as if it's up to us to be the one who guides and directs ourselves. But we're frightened because we can't really see what we should do and what's best for us. We are afraid and terrified because even though we're trying hard to be our own authority, we know that we're not good enough to lead ourselves. And so we're in a position where Herod is, which is that we're frightened and we don't know what's the best thing for us. We want to be in charge of assigning value to ourselves, but no matter what we say to ourselves, we're always as empty as we were the day before. We're put in a position by this story of having to make a choice. And the choice is this. Will we accept that there is a true king and it's not us? Or will we resist the claim of this story, which is that the new king has been born? Now, let's look at what happens with Herod. Because he's in this moment of decision. And the story tells us what he does. Go ahead and find verse 4. This is what Herod does as he's afraid. Calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. Now listen, let me just tell you this. If you don't know, scribes and chief priests of the people would have been people who knew the scriptures of the Old Testament. These are the words that God had given to his people. And he knew that these men knew those scriptures. And therefore, he understood that the promises that had always been ringing in his ears that one day God would come and establish his rule in the world, he knew that there was something that the prophets had said about this. He couldn't quite put his finger on what the details were. So he called someone who knew the scriptures and asked them, "What do you know about this Messiah coming into the world?" Look what they say in verse 5. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means the least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Incidentally, who was born there in Bethlehem? You can say it out loud. Who?
David.
David was born there. Who else? Yeah, Jesus. Yeah, David's great and all, but Jesus is better. Herod's trying to get some information here. He hears that there's this king coming into the world who means to displace him from authority in his own life, and so he's trying to get some information about where this king is going to come from. Look at verse 7. "Then Herod secretly called for the wise men, and he learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared." He wanted to know when the baby was born, so he would know exactly how old this supposed new king was going to be. Verse 8, "Then he sent them," that's the wise men, "to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring word to me so that I may also go and pay homage.'" Now, I read that word homage. Do you know what it means to pay homage? Do you know what that means? It's to give him props. It means, that's what it says in the Living Bible. Herod, you know what Herod's doing right now? He's scheming. He's pretending. He's trying to work out a way to get information about where this king is and what's going to happen, when he's going to be born and all that. And he's telling these wise men he's doing that because he means to worship him, but that's not why he's doing that. Do you know why he's doing that? This is the part that never makes it into a Christmas sermon, and for good reason, because it's so awful. Herod has been faced with the choice of whether to acknowledge the true king or to try to retain control over his own life, and he chooses to resist. And the way he does that is by using all of his authority and power to try to eradicate and destroy this new king. And here's how he does it. This is awful. Look down at verse 16. What happens is this. The wise men, they go off. They find the child. They're warned in a dream not to go back and tell Herod where he is. They escape another way. Herod finds out that they didn't tell him. And look what happens in verse 16. "When Herod saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, he was infuriated. And he sent and killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had learned from the wise men." He knew how old this baby was from the wise men. And what he did as the false king is he killed every child who was 2 or under. Because he did not want to accept the authority of this new king. Isn't that horrendous? Listen, it's easy to read these stories and miss this, but maybe someone in here has experienced the loss of a child to death. Do you know what that's like? If you haven't experienced it, and I haven't, I once sat with a pair of adults who in 2 years had lost both of their sons to death. Both of them were younger than me, and I sat in their home after the second one died, hours after they found him. And I've never seen anything more awful in my whole life. The grief was so heavy and terrible that it just shattered the hearts of both parents. And I was undone as I sat there, speechless in the wake of all of that pain and misery. And in this man's attempt to resist the authority of the true king, He kills all the children in the village of Bethlehem and in the areas of around there. Think of the misery and destruction of that choice. Now, what I'm going to say next, it may be hard to accept, but I believe it's true. And I'm saying this to you, but also to me. If it's true that you and I, by the Christmas story, are put in a place where we have to make a choice, whether we will accept the authority of this true king or not, it's also true that every time we choose to resist his real authority, the consequences are destructive and ugly and awful and ruinous and life-destroying, just as Herod's choice is here. Consider this for a moment. When I'm faced with whether I will obey the true king or not, this king tells me that when someone is evil or wicked to me, I should respond with kindness and love. And do you know what happens when I disobey this king and act like I'm the one in charge and return evil for evil? Do you know what happens? It keeps the cycle of destruction going in the world. And it makes things that are bad get worse. And when I resist the true king, I destroy life like Herod. Think of it in this way. This king, this true king says to me, love the people who are around you in your life, the people who are close to you. And the way you do that is don't keep any records of the wrongs they commit against you. And when I choose not to obey that king, but rather store up in my mind a memory of every time someone has hurt me and put it down in there, do you know what happens deep in my chest as I bury those awful things they've done? I grow resentful and mean and cruel. And then rather than perpetuating love and forgiveness and joy, I spread resentment, anger, and hatred everywhere I go. And that destroys life. When I choose not to listen to this king and turn my eyes away from the poor and the needy and the hungry and the thirsty and the naked and the lonely, when I look away from them and instead keep my eyes only on myself so I can use every resource I have, all of the energy, all of the money, all of the talents, all of the time I have to gratify myself, do you know what I do to those others? I keep them poor. I keep them hungry. I make them thirsty. And I make it so they stay lonely. I do that as I resist the true authority of the king who says to me, he says it to me personally, Christian, turn your eyes to those who are in need and meet their needs with the love that I give you. Listen to me, every one of you. This is true for all of us. The king has come. And he puts each one of us in a position where we must choose. And the choice we must make is either to accept his authority or, like Herod, to resist it. And when we resist it, like Herod, it destroys life. And that happened with Herod. And I'll tell you what, if you want an explanation for all of the misery you see in the world, on a grand scale and on a personal scale, in your own life and in the lives of the people around you, there's a simple explanation. It's that we keep acting as if we're the kings and the queens of ourselves instead of acknowledging the true authority of this king. Now, I want to put one other question out, and it's this. What if, instead of resisting his authority, Herod had accepted it? Now, that's pretty hypothetical. So let me put it in this way. What if instead of resisting the authority of this true king, you or I accepted it? What would happen? What would it be like if any one of us here, and I don't mean in sort of a religious or churchly way, but what if truly any one of us acknowledged the true authority of this king and then lived as if it were true that he is the king? And let me just tell you by the way. The resistance that we put out, do you know that it doesn't change the fact that he is the king? It doesn't. The question is not whether he is or not. It is whether you or I would acknowledge that he is or not. Now, there's an answer to this question, and it comes in part in a very beautiful literary illusion in this story. Not when I say illusion, do you know what I mean by that? Not like David Copperfield. Illusion. Isn't it spelled different when you allude to something? What is it?
A-L-L.
A-L-L. Okay, you're, at the very least, you're learning a new term, allusion. Matthew is doing something here in this story that I would say almost no one who heard it in the first century would have missed, but which we miss because we're separated from the story. Let me ask you this. Last week, I talked about Joseph and said that he looked like another Joseph. Do you remember that? Think about how Herod responds to the announcement of this king's presence. What did he do? He killed all the children who were two and under. And he did that because he was hoping to put an end to the threat that was in this child. Does that sound like anybody else to you? He knew that there was this... I skipped over this part here. But listen, let me just tell you. You can read this in chapter 2 on your own at another time. He knew, had found out that there was this baby that was going to be born that was a threat. And so he had all the children killed. And what happens... I'll just tell you this. Joseph gets warned in a dream of what Herod's plan is. And he tells him, take the child out of where you are and go to Egypt. And when you get to Egypt, you'll be safe. Does that sound like anything to you? Some of you might not know the scriptures at all. Let me just tell you. This is a story that all of Israel would have known, and this is why they would have known it. It concerned one of the greatest heroes in their self-understanding. Do you know the story I mean? Do you know the story of Moses? Yeah. Do you know who Moses was at the time? This is important. At the time, the first century, Moses was a figure who was popular in the literature of the time. So in our Bible, we have the stories that were collected as scripture. You know that there were a lot of other things written about God during this time that didn't ever come to the Bible, right? There was a man named Philo of Alexandria, for example. He was a very popular sort of novelist. Okay? Also, at the same time, was a man named Josephus. You might know him. He was a historian. He wrote stories. Do you know that both of them, at the time this story was written, had popular books that circulated among all the people who would have heard this story, and they were about the life of Moses? And the reason that they wrote so much about Moses, do you know why they wrote so much about Moses? Anybody have any idea what it was about Moses that was so great for these people? He was a hero for a reason. He was a deliverer. Now, I want to make this clear. If you don't know the story of Moses, really quickly, Moses was born at a time in Egypt when the Hebrews, the Jewish people were there, and they were becoming a threat. Pharaoh, this wicked king, finds out that there's some threat in these people, and he decides to have them all killed. One of them is freed from this by fleeing from that land to a land of protection. This one goes out of Egypt to get away from the threat, and that's Moses. Years later, do you know what happens years later? Pharaoh dies. And when Pharaoh dies, do you know what happens to this Moses who's out in the wilderness now? An angel comes and says, those who... Look at this. Would you just look down here? Would you? This is very exciting. Look at verse 19. Look at this. I'm pointing this out for a reason. Verse 19 says, when Herod died, an angel of the Lord suddenly appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, get up and take the child and his mother to go to the land of Israel, for those who were seeking the child's life are dead. Do you notice the word those there? Is that the right pronoun? Who was seeking the child's life? How many Herods are there? Why does it say those? Do you know why it says those? That is a word for word quote of the exact thing that happens when Moses is out in the wilderness. The author here is saying to all of the readers, I want you to know that this king who has come, the true Jesus, the true king who comes into this story and has to flee off to Egypt to get away and who is now going to come back from Egypt, this one should make you think of your hero Moses, who was not the king but was the deliverer. Why? This is why. If you will accept the authority of this true king, you will not just get the authority of a king in your life. Do you know what you will also get? Deliverance. Deliverance. All of the people who were alive in the first century, who were Jews, I told you that Rome still led their area and Herod was their king, their lives were miserable. Their lives were... Listen, does anyone in here feel like their lives are not so great? Everyone to whom this story came was like a person who is oppressed Their lives were broken. It was like they were imprisoned. They felt bound up. There was no sense of freedom for them. They thought that God had forgotten them, that they were captives in their own land, and they were miserable, and life had become hard. There was no joy, no light in their lives, and they were all bound up. Do any of you feel like that? This story, Matthew is telling the people through this story, listen, you have to know this. In Jesus Christ has come the true King and a hero the likes that we have never seen since Moses. And this one will deliver. Now, whether you know it or not, now I'm talking about you, not the story anymore. You need to be delivered. There's not a person in here for whom that's not true. I need to be delivered. All of you need to be delivered. Some of you know that. As I say it, you're in your hearts, you're saying, yes, I need that. Some of you don't believe it. You still need to be delivered. I need to be delivered from the tyrannical rule that I try to exercise over my own life because I'm a desperate, despotic ruler. And you need to be delivered from that too. I need to be delivered from a life where all of the goals that are standing before me are the ones that I've chosen for myself rather than the ones that the true God has put before me for my own good and the world's own good. You need to be delivered from a life like that. You need to be delivered from your hunger and your emptiness and your sense of being lost and from the dark in which you wander. You need to be delivered from that. Every one of us needs to be delivered from the sin that causes us misery and breaks our hearts and ruins everything that it touches. We all need to be delivered. And this story says this. The deliverer has come. It puts this decision before you and before me. Will you accept the authority of this true King? If you will be delivered. If Herod had accepted his authority, he would have been delivered. If you accept the authority of this true King, what you will find is one who will deliver you from all that hampers your life from being all that it was meant to be. You will find that you are free from the oppression that crushes you. And you are free to live in this world as the man or woman that God designed you to be. And what God means for all of us, every one of us, is to hear this truth, to accept this King, and to be delivered by this man. Now, will you be delivered by him? This is something that he knows. It's something that he longs for. It's something that, judging by this table, that he has gone to every length possible to do. If you and I will hear this Christmas story, we will hear that a King has come who means to deliver us. If we will answer in accepting him, we will know the deliverance that is ours. Let's pray together